We're holding in Ein Yaakov, the end of the Feyum days in Brachos. And before we begin, I want to take a few minutes to tell you about a person who used to attend the Machon. And we just heard about that he is no longer with us. His name was Dov Ezrachi, and he grew up in Poland. He was a priest.
Wow.
And during his studies to move forward within the church, so he felt he needed more moving things to teach him. And there was an auditorium next to the church he would attend. So that auditorium, they'd rent out the auditorium to different speakers. One of them was a rabbi in Poland. And without telling anyone, he decided he saw masses coming to hear the rabbi's lectures. So he would go in and listen to the speech. And he was moved by the speech. So he said, "It's good, Musa. I need to work on my traits. They're telling me how to be a good person. So what if he's a rabbi and I'm a priest? I'll attend." And he started going on a steady basis on Sundays. And then he started going more often. And then he started taking all the questions he had on the church and the New Testament and presenting it to his mentors. And ultimately he decided that he wants to convert. He was married with 4 or 5 children. And he decided that this is what he has to do. He had to travel to the United States to convert. And then he had troubles coming here. Then he came here and he stayed at the Machon. When he was at Machon Meir, between classes, when there was a break, you could catch him in the library, sitting and taking advantage of the extra minutes. He was at our Seder this past Pesach, when everyone else left after the preparations for the Seder, so he stayed around. That was who he was. He was always checking to see, maybe we could help with this, maybe we could help with that, maybe this isn't finished, maybe that. He was one of the kindest people that ever entered Machon Meir. He was at our house for a class, and after class, I said, "The store across the street is going to be open for another 10 minutes. Do you mind staying? The kids are sleeping. You'll babysit for 10 minutes and I'll run across the street. I'll get a few things that we need." So he said, "Sure, no problem." But he said, "Why should I waste the time I'm sitting here? Tell me what needs to be fixed for the 10 minutes I'm here. Didn't you tell me there was a light switch that doesn't work? So while I went across the street to do the shopping, he stayed and fixed the light switch that wasn't working. I once needed a closet fixed. So I paid him. But he worked. He came and worked. He was a carpenter by profession. He did it with, you could do something with half a heart or with a whole heart. And whatever he did with a whole heart. He told me when he was looking for a shidduch, he said, "I want a girl that not only obeys the Torah, but also wants to do what's good. Because sometimes you could do the Torah and go by the letter of the law. And I need someone who not only will go by the letter of the law, but will also want to be a good person." And that was the type of person he was. He loved nature, and he was in the process of developing a diving business down in Sinai when he was in an accident last week. All the time, even after he did his giyul, he supported his family back in Poland. Legally he wasn't divorced, and legally he could get away with doing whatever he wanted, but he said, "They're my children." So he would send money back to his wife and kids, and he'd come to me and we'd think together what gifts would be the most educational gifts that would help his kids move forward. His kids were devout Christians, but he said, "I want them to be educated, to be good people. So what can I give them? What gifts does it make sense to give them that they'll use for good and not for bad? That'll be educational and will still be interesting to a child, to a teenager of this generation."
So
he died without children. He died without ever getting to remarry. we'll learn tonight, and our learning should be to his merit, Dov Ben Avraham. We're holding the Hey Amud Bet, the end. Tanya, we have a Tanai quote. Abba Binyamin Omer. Abba Binyamin taught us, Shnaim shenichnasu leitpalel. If two enter a synagogue to pray, v'kadam echad mehem leitpalel, and one of them finished praying first, v'yatza, and he left. So they're coming in the evening, they enter shul, one of them finishes first, so he leaves, and he leaves the other one alone to fend for himself. He's there in a shul. Their shuls usually were in the outskirts. They were outside the city, next to where people worked, out in the fields. So these two enter alone. Now, you have to ask yourself, why are they alone? So the simple understanding is because many people didn't daven Maariv with a minyan in ancient times. In ancient times, if they davened with a minyan, then they'd have minyan just when they finished work. They daven Mincha Maariv together and go home. And many people daven Maariv alone. We find it throughout the halacha that there are many people who didn't make it to Minyan for Maariv. So these two, they knew the Gemara that we're going to learn later tonight, that even if you're going to pray alone, you're better off praying in a shul than you are praying at home. Even if you're not going to make it for Minyan, the mere fact that you're praying in shul makes your prayer better than by praying at home. So these two come to shul together, and one of them finishes first, and he leaves. Ve'lo himtin lechaveron, and he didn't wait for his friend. Torfin lo tfilato befanav. They slam his prayer in his face. Shneimar, as the verse states, Toref nafshov ve'apo, hal ma'ancha te'azav aretz. The angel slams his soul in his face, and the prayer is called our soul. It's representative of our soul. So it gets slammed in a person's face because God says, do you think just because of you I leave the land? You came into prayer, so I came down to be part of the prayer. But you think that you finished prayer so you could leave and I'm no longer present? No, I was here for your friend's prayer as well. Ve'lo od, not only that, ela shegored mishchina shtistalek miYisrael. He causes the Shechina to leave the Jewish people, shneimar, as the verse continues and says, that in this behavior, v'yetak tzu minkumo, the rock of Israel gets uprooted from its place. Ve'en tzur ela kadosh baruch hu, and the rock of Israel is God, as the verse states, tzur yeladcha teshi. That the verse states that when the Jews are punished, they'll recognize it's because they've forsaken the rock that bore them, which means God. And if he waited for his friend who was taking a longer time to pray, Maschao, what does he merit? What's his wages? Amar Rabbi Yossi bar Bichanina zoche lebrachot alalu. He merits these blessings. Shneimar, as the verse states, Lo hikshavta lemitzvotai. If only you'd listen to my mitzvot. Now the word hikshiv could mean to listen, and the word mitzvah could mean commandment. But the word hikshiv could also mean to pause. You pause to listen. And the word mitzvah could also stem from the root tzavta, which means companionship, communionship. So if only you would have paused to have companionship, to wait for your friend, lu hikshavta, if only you would have listened, would have paused, le mitzvotai, in order to maintain my companionship, to remain with your fellow man who's alone in shul, vayicha nahar shlomecha, your peace will be like a river, vayicha chol zarecha, and your offsprings will be like sand, meaning a person will merit to have peace and many, many offsprings. So this is relevant not only out in the fields, it's relevant in the city as well. If you're the last one in shul and someone's there praying, so it's a good idea to wait for him. If he started with everyone else, he came on time for prayer, and he's not just adding to his prayer, but it's just taking him longer to pray, so then one must wait for him. If he came late to shul, and he chose to start praying, so then it's at his own risk. He came late to shul, and he started praying after everyone else, then he knew he'd finish after everyone else, then it's a nice thing to wait for him, but it's not obligatory. If he's taking a long time because he's adding all kinds of requests in his prayer, so he's entitled to do that, and it's a nice thing to wait for him, but it's not obligatory. The only time it's obligatory, and what the Gemara is talking about, that a person's own prayer won't be accepted if he does not wait for his friend, is if he came in on time, he came in together, or he came in started Shmon Esrei on time with the minyan, and he's taking a longer time without additions to the prayer.
But how can is it say that Hashem goes away if he's everywhere?
It's true, but some places and sometimes Hashem makes himself more revealed than others. As we say, there's more Hashgacha in Israel than in Chutz Arts. More Hashgacha on Shabbos than on a weekday. More Hashgacha in Shul than outside of Shul.
So he specifically goes to Shul and reveals his Shem.
We'll see that later in a few minutes. We'll get to that. Now, here there's a lot that could be discussed. There's room to expand. What does it mean the prayer gets slammed in a person's face? There's room to expand on what does it mean that there'll be peace like a river? We're going to see at the end of the Gemara, the end of the Gemara Brachos, the Gemara discusses different dreams that represent peace. And the Gemara discusses there's peace like a river, and there's peace like a flock of birds, and there's peace like a pot on a fire. So there are different versions of peace. The river is the greatest form of peace, where everything is flowing together. Birds, they fly together, but they're each one's its own entity. And the kettle on the fire, so then there's only peace between the water on top and the fire on bottom, because there's something separating between them. So there are times when there's only peace when there's a separation. There's time when there's only peace when we're going in the same direction, but we're each our own entity. And then there's a peace, which is like the river, where we're all flowing together, we're one body. And that's the blessing that the verse tells us, if one would wait for his friend, so then God blesses him with peace like a river.
Doesn't it say, Rabbi, that his prayers, if he leaves before, they're ripped up?
So that's what we saw initially, yeah. Now here also, there's room to expand. What does it mean? We translated the verse that the prayer gets slammed in his face. But there's another understanding to the verse. It says, Toref nafsho, his soul gets torn apart, be'apo. So we said, in his face. But be'apo could also mean in his anger. And we know that one of the angels in heavens is called Af. That's one of the angels, so to speak, represents God's anger. So there's another understanding here, that the prayer gets torn up with that angel that's called Apo, God's anger. And there's room to expand here, but I'd rather we cover ground. Tanya, we have a Tanai quote. Abba Binyamin Omer. Abba Binyamin taught us. Ilmalei. Now the word Ilmalei, Tosos teaches us in the beginning of the second chapter of Megillah, has two directly contradictory meanings. The word Ilmalei, spent with a yud, means if it would be so. The word Ilmalei, where at the end you have an aleph, means if not. So, if yes or if not, depends on if the last letter is a yud or an aleph. If it's a yud, it means if yes, if it would be so. And Ilmalei with an aleph would mean if it wouldn't be so. So here the Gemara says Ilmalei with a yud. If it would be so, that Nitna reshut la'ayin lirot, if God would give permission to the eye to see all the organisms that are around it, all the creatures, the heavenly creatures, the spiritual demons that surround the person, en kol b'riya yechola la'amod mipnei hamazikim. No creature would be able to remain extant in face of these harmful creatures that surround us. Amar Abaye. So Abaye told us, Inu nefishi minan, they outnumber us. Vekaimi alan, and they surround us, ki kasla leugya. Just like when you plant a grape, a vine, so it needs a lot of water. And it doesn't naturally get enough water. So they'd surround it, they'd dig around it, they'd make a hole. And in that hole they'd fill water, and then the vine has enough water. The water would amass in there. So just like you have this surrounding a vine, a big furrow, a round furrow that gets filled with water, so too every individual is surrounded with the multitudes of mazikin, harmful spiritual creatures.
Why?
You got to ask God, not me. Amar Rav Huna. So Rav Huna taught us, oh, really, I'm not joking.
Kol chad I know, I understand that we have some kind of things, demons, but there are no angels to protect
them? Oh, so there are angels, you're right. We say, there are angels for sure. Ki malachav yitzavelach
lishmachav kol
dorchecha.
Are there swords or something?
That's, if you want, we have to look it up. The Gemara says in Shabbos that whoever says vayichulu, then the two angels that come with him, they bless him. So there we see that there are angels that accompany a person and accompany him for a blessing. That's when we get to the Gemara Shabbos. We'll discuss the angels that protect us.
What is that word?
Which word?
You said that the two angels come.
It says when we say Vayichulu, right? What Friday night we say the verse in the Torah Vayichulu Hashemayim V'aretz
Echol Tzivam. It's only Friday night.
So when we get that Gemara, we'll see that the Gemara over there refers to the two angels that are consistently accompanying a person. Seems like every person consistently has angels that accompany him, as we'll see later on in the Gemara and Brachos.
What are
that
the angels and demons once again?
Okay.
What should we do if we want to see the shinim?
We'll get there in a few lines. Amar Ravuna, kol chad vechad minan. Ravuna told us each of us alfa mismale has 1,000 on his left side, v'ribivata miyimine, and 10,000 on his right side. Shneimar, the verse states yipol mitzedecha elef, on your left side 1,000 will fall. Uvava, and 10,000 imenecha on your right side. Why? Because most mitzvot are performed with the right hand. The only exception is tefillin. Amar Rava. So that's why we have so many demons on our right side. Amar Rava, yeah.
If I'm left-handed, is it the other way around?
I don't know. I don't know. Amar Rava. I'm also left-handed, so I got the same problem.
What if you're ambidextrous?
Well, if I don't know what's the deal with a lefty, I certainly don't know what the deal is with an ambidextrous person. Amar Rava.
There is a dark ritual, dark magic, that if you put ashes of the cat.
It's the next line. One second. We'll get it. Amar Rava. So Rava tells us, Hayduch kadavi bekala minayi havi. So what's kala? In ancient times, everyone used to take off 2 months. They'd work, and then they'd have months where they took off to go learn Torah. So that was called kala, yalchei kala, the months like a kala, where the Jewish people would unite to come learn Torah. They made enough money, now they could take some time off. Now enough money means they have food to eat for that day, for that month, whatever. But they weren't as wealthy as us, and yet they took off a month in the summer, a month in the winter. Each time they take off a month, and they'd come learn Torah. And our sages tell us that they'd have such masses of Jews learning Torah that the Shekhinah would come down. They'd see heavenly fire above them. They'd literally see miracles when they'd get together for these learning Torahs. So sometimes you have 600,000 people present, but you have a coliseum that's big enough to encase these 600,000 people. You have an area where everyone could fit, and nonetheless it's crowded. So why is it crowded, says Rava? The only reason it's crowded, it's not because we have 600,000 people. It's because we have all these demons around. They're making it squishy. When a person sometimes feels his knees are weak, they're tired, and he can't figure out why, minayu, they're causing it. The clothing of the rabbis, dibalu, that they wear thin, and the rabbis aren't out there working. Why should their clothes wear thin? They should last much longer than the average worker, and yet they wear thin. When we learn Torah, they come and they rub against us. So they wear our clothing thin. Hani chari de minakfan. When a person's knees shake, minayu, they cause it. Hai man de baile meidalehu. Person wants to know them. I don't know why a person would want to know them. But if a person wants to know them, now here, if you're going to listen to this part of the Gemara, you got to listen till the end of the Gemara. Because sometimes people walk out in the middle and then they end up getting in trouble. So don't walk out in the middle. If a person wants to know about these demons, lately let him bring kitma, the ashes, nehila, that's thin, v'nehade rapuye, and place it around his bed, uvetzafra, and in the morning, chazi, he'll see, kikari, tetanagola, like chicken legs. Oh, so my father has a cheese factory, and one night they had dust from the cheese. When you process cheese, so it makes dust, just like when you cut wood. So they had the dust all over the floor of the factory, and they come the next morning and they see chicken legs. So all the workers started making crosses around themselves and saying there's a demon walking around. So my father said, "One second, who was here first this morning?" And they looked at the person who was there first, and I guess it was a female worker, and she had, you know, when they nail in supports on the bottom of the shoe, so they were in triangular shape, and when she walked, she made that shape on the powder. So today, I don't know if I would count on this. So anyway, it says if you put dust around your bed, you'll see like chicken feet, like rooster feet. If you want to see them, Leiti shilyata de shumrita uchmeta batuchmeta. What you have to bring is, you bring the...
And the cat's ashes into your eyes.
First one of them.
You take the shilya, which is the placenta of a cat that is black, the daughter of a black cat. Buchaita bat buchaita. That cat has to be a firstborn cat, the daughter of a firstborn cat. You take her placenta, velikalye benuha, and burn it in a fire, velishkeke, and then grind it down, velimle le'ene minei, and put some in his eyes, and put it in a metal tube, and seal it with a metal seal, lest they steal it from him, and let him seal its opening, so he shouldn't get damaged. The Gemara says this is supposed to protect you from getting damaged, but Rav Beva, the son of Abaye, did this, chazar, he saw them, and he was damaged. And the rabbis prayed over him, and ultimately he was healed. Whenever we have these Gemaras, so we have to know that you got to get it exactly right in order for it to work. For example, do we know what species of cat they called a cat? Do we know what they called black? Some things in the Torah that are called red are really brown. Some things that are called green are really yellow. When they say you have to grind it down, do we know how you're supposed to grind it down? Every detail is important, as we see in other Gemaras. So if you want to try all this, you could try. I wouldn't recommend it. The Gemara says you might get damaged. But the truth is that in order to get any of the things the Gemara says, be it the medicines the Gemara says, or the this kind of stuff that the Gemara says, you got to know what you're doing. I don't know what to do, so...
Is that why in my neighborhood, you see the Haredi, you walk around the cats?
Around the cats? I don't know. I'm not scared of cats. Maybe they don't want to get bitten or scratched.
This is a dark ritual, right?
That's probably
this is a dark magic ritual.
I don't think the Gemara discusses dark magic.
Oh, but seriously, one of the rabbis did it in the Kisogin.
That's what it says.
Well, I mean, I know, but
I guess he knew how to do it.
I heard it also.
Okay. Tanya, we have a Tanai quote.
But it would be very interesting to see.
We have a Tanai quote.
Abba Binyamin
Meir. All over the place, chicken eggs.
Abba Binyamin said.
That would be very funny.
En tfilato shel adam nishmat ele bebet hakneset. Person's prayer is only heard in a shul. Shenemar, as the verse states, lishmo al harina ve la tfila. When Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, erected the Beis HaMikdash, so he prayed to God, I want this temple to be erected for you so that you hear our song and our prayer. So here's a word to the wise. People sometimes complain, oh, the chazan was singing in shul. Yeah, he's supposed to sing in shul. That's the job. A shul is called a place where you have singing and prayer. You're supposed to sing. And from here we derive, bimkom rina, in a place where you have great singing, that's where you're supposed to have prayer. And this is not only speaking about when you have the singing, but rather the place where you have singing. Meaning, a shul is a place where one stands a better chance of his prayers being answered, because the Torah says God listens to the place where people sing, and that is the shul. Here we see the value of song. Someone explained this Gemara in a way that really isn't pshat in the Gemara, but it does have an interesting message, and because David is present, so we'll mention it. They say, look at that, you get special treatment. They want to say like this, that the Gemara is referring to the difference between one who prays at home and one who prays in shul. In shul, so they say Psukei Dezimra slowly, and they sing it, go slowly, especially by the Sephardim. A person's davening at home, and switches pages, and he flies through it. Why are they called Psukei Dezimra? So Zimra could mean song, and Zimra, Lezamer, could also mean to cut down branches. When a vine is growing, part of what we have to do in order to help the grapes grow well is to cut down extra branches. That's called Zmira. It's one of the activities that's prohibited on Shabbos and during the Shemitah year. So we sing these songs, and we call them Psukei, the verses of Zimra, of cutting down extra branches. And Kabbalistically, that's why we call them Psukei de Zimra, because these verses can cut down the heavenly forces that stand against us, whatever that means. So when one prays Bitzibur, so he's saying the Psukei de Zimra the way he should. So then, when he comes to pray, so he's already gotten rid of all the problems on the way, and his prayer is going to be more accepted. If one's praying at home, and he's flying through Psukei de Zimra, so then they have much less value, and that's why his prayer will be less accepted. Again, I don't think this is pshat, but it is an interesting thought. Amar Ravin, Rabbi Avin said, right? We know Ravin is short for Rabbi Avin. Bar Ravida, the son of Ravida, so he quoted Amar Rav Yitzchak, he quoted Rav Yitzchak, Minan shakadosh hu matzui bebet ha-kneset. How do we know that God is found in shul? What does the word matzui mean? So that depends on if the root of the word is limtso or limtso.
Ha.
Okay. So, the word mitzia, something that's found, so that's with an aleph. And then we have the word mitzui, like mitz, right? Right? Mitz, Fleshix here in Israel, right? Mitz. So mitz means to squeeze out. So when we have the word limatsui, we could understand it. How do you know God can be squeezed out of a shul? That's not the right meaning. But rather it means, how do you know God is found in a shul? But whenever we have, the Gemara will say, imtimtzi lomar or imtimtza lomar. There's a marked difference between timtza and timtzi. Timtza means you'll find, timtzi means you'll squeeze out, like mitz. So over here, even though it says matsui, it means from the word mitzia. How do we know that God is found in shul? Shneimaz, the verse states, Elokim nitzav ba'adat kel. God is standing present and waiting for the congregation of God. So we know that a shul, even before you come to pray, God's there waiting. He's waiting for us to come. As we're going to see later on, the Gemara is going to say that if 10 people don't arrive, so God says, hey, I came here, where are you guys? What you busy doing? So shul, God's there even before us. Elokim nitzav, God is already standing, waiting, ba'adat kel, where the congregation of God will congregate. So we just proved that God is readily found in shul. And that's why the ancient custom was, don't tell anyone, shh. 100 years ago, women used to enter freely into shul. While everyone was learning on the side, the women would go up to the front and pray and cry and light candles by the Aron HaKodesh. Go see a woman do that today, everyone will yell at her. But in all the Hasidic Shtiblach, and I heard this from the old Chenchkevich Rebbe himself, that in Europe it was accepted, it was known. That's what would happen. They would be learning on the side, and women would come and go to the front and cry and daven and stand before the Aron HaKodesh asking Hashem their requests. Yeah?
There are still like two niches for the left and right of the Aron HaKodesh, and before the Mincha of Erev Shabbat and Kabbalah Shabbat, the women go and light the candles there, but then they go back to the Mincha.
Okay, so there was, I forgot the name, there was a great rabbi in Bukharim. He established Bukharim, and he was the chief fundraiser of Porat Yosef. I think his name was Rabbi Yaakov Kohen. And he came from a wealthy family. His mother used to go, I don't remember which city in Africa they lived in. She'd go every Friday, she'd go through the 24 synagogues of the city and ensure that every shul, now Friday is a busy day for a woman, right? She'd ensure every shul was swept and cleaned for Shabbos. And one job she kept for herself, she would go and light the candle on top of the Aron HaKodesh, the Ner Tamid. And she'd put in enough oil that would last from week to week. And there was a big rabbi who used to come from Israel to fundraise, and he'd go through different cities every time he went. And when he came through her city once, so she sent her son to university, and she told him, she used to set him up, she'd set up a nice room for him and take care of everything he needs. And one time she said to him, you know, all my kids, they're studying, but none of them are great rabbis. I want a son that's going to be a big Talmid Chacham. So he said, what do you want me to do? She said, I want you to bring me a kamea from the great Mekubalim in Israel. So the Kabbalists here in Jerusalem, the story goes back about 100 years. So the next time he had to travel out to Africa, he was going to go to a different city, but he stopped by her city and brought her a kamea that he had arranged from the Mekubalim here in Israel for one of her sons. So her son comes home from university, And she tells him, son, the rabbi brought us this, it'll protect you, it'll be good for you, wear it. So he wears it. And the next day, he comes home early, and he says, ma, what am I doing in college? So she says, what do you mean? He said, I don't know, I walked in today, and nothing made sense to me. So she said, what do you want to do? He said, I don't know, there's no point in going there. I walked in today, and everything they said seemed stupid to me. So she said, well, what do you want? He said, I think I want to learn Torah. So she said, good, go learn Torah. So he goes, and he's got a wealthy mother. He goes to the rabbis of the town. He sits down and starts learning. Never set foot again into college. And he's learning and he's learning and he's learning. And after a year or two, however long it took, they tell him, you know, we can't help you anymore. Your questions are too good. We don't know enough. You got to go to Israel. Over there you'll learn more. And he came here and he helped establish Bukharim. He was one of those that established Bukharim. And they say it's his merit that Bukharim remained a Torah center to this day. It's a very Torani place.
Is Joseph Maghribi or something?
I don't think so.
No.
Maybe.
He was in Israel, then he went to Uzbekistan, Bukhara.
I don't think it was him, but I'm not sure I'm remembering the name correctly. And then he became the chief fundraiser of Pohat Yosef. So at any rate, going back to our Gemara, so his mother always went and lit the candles in the shuls. So over here, this story, by the way, is on the website in the Hebrew section. We have Shiurim by Rav Mutzafi. And in one of the classes, he quotes this. He quotes this story. So in shul, God is present even when we're not present. He comes first. He's waiting for us. How do we know that any ten that pray, the Shechina is with them? And we discussed last week in the Chumashir of Parshas Vayigash, the Machlok is Rambam Ramban. What does the word Shechina mean? So the Shechina is with them. How do we know this? The first states, Elokim Nitzav Badat Kel. God is standing where there's a congregation of God. That's 10 people who are doing a mitzvah. How do we know that even 3 that are sitting to judgment, that the Shechina is with them, as the verse states, Bekerav Elokim Yishpot. God is amongst the judges when they judge. How do we know that even 2 that are sitting and delving in Torah, that the Shechina is with them, as the verse states, Aznit Bu Yireh Hashem Yishel Yireyu. Then the men who were God-fearing spoke one to the other, Vayakshev Hashem, Hashem listened, Vayishma, and he heard, Vayikatev Sefer Zikron Lefanav Lirei Hashem Choshei Shmo, and he wrote it down as a book of remembrance to those that fear God and those that value His name. So there are different books in heaven, right? This is not to be confused with the book of merits. We have a book where every merit we do gets written. This is a special book where God writes when 2 people learn Torah, they get written down in that book. Ma'al Choshei Shmo, what does the verse mean, that this is the book of remembrance for those that fear God and those that value His name? Amar Ravashi, so the word Choshvei Shmo could mean Chashivut, importance, those that give importance to God's name. It could also mean Lachshov, to think. So Ravashi taught us, Afilu Chashav Adam Nasot Mitzvah. This is a reference to those who think of God's name. What does it mean to think of God's name? If a person thinks of performing a mitzvah, notice that a mitzvah is a reference to God's name, right? That's called Choshvei Shmo. If a person thinks of doing a mitzvah and he wants to do mitzvah in enas, and then beyond things occurred beyond his control and he was forced v'lo asah, and he wasn't able to do it, ma'ala alav ha-katuv, the verse treats it as though ke'ilu asah, as though he performed the mitzvah. This is an important rule. When a person wants to perform a mitzvah and he does his best and then he can't, so then it's as though he performed it. I always told people that in shidduchim, people would set me up for a shidduch, and then it wouldn't work out, and they'd be all apologetic. And I'd say, what do you mean? You married me off, I already had kids and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and it was such a brilliant idea, the girl you set me up with. Because the Gemara tells us, if you did your best to perform mitzvah and it didn't work out, God treats it as though you did. So I told him, you married me off, you did your best. Now, it was beyond your control that it didn't work. So okay, you, but from your perspective, you already brought great-great-great-grandchildren to the world. How do we know that even one person who's sitting and dealing in the Torah, the Shechina is with him, as the verse states, any place you mention my name, I come to you and I bless you, God says. So learning Torah, we know the Torah is all a reference to God's name, right? It's just different combinations, but bottom line, it's as though we're always mentioning God's name in learning Torah. God says, you're learning Torah, so I'm with you over there. V'chimachar, that's what they say. I don't know where this is written, but they say, you know, you're not supposed to sleep during the day because your neshama, where's it going to go? It's not the time to do din. But what's the best way to rest if you have to rest by day? You have to rest, you rest by day. Now, what's the best way to do it? To have someone who sits next to you and learns. Because then your Shekhinah hovers over your head and listens to his learning Torah. So God's over there. God's there when a person's learning. If God is present, even when one's learning, do I need a source that says that God is present when two are learning? The Gemara answers, when you have two, then what they say gets actually written down. When one person learns, so he gets the merits, but it doesn't get written in that special book of remembrance for that's from two and up. If two learn Torah, it gets written. So why do I need a verse for two, three? That's obvious. I would have thought, you know, judging, sitting in judgment, that's not learning Torah, that's just making peace in the world. God isn't present there. The verse teaches us that coming to judgment is also a form of Torah. Michal, we got to talk, don't disappear. And if God is present, even when there are three, asara mibaya. So I need a verse that says that when there are ten, God is present. Asara kadma shchina v'atia. The verse teaches us that when there are ten, God precedes them. Klata adiyatve. When there are three, God waits till they come in court, and then God joins them. But for ten, God precedes them. So what we learned today, let's sum it up, and then everyone's got to go to Ma'ariv. We began with the quote that if people enter to pray and two are left behind, so then one should wait for his friend, and we discussed the different halachot. It's provided he came on time, provided he isn't taking extra long with extra additions, and if he doesn't, then the prayer gets slammed. We discussed the angel named Af. We discussed the different forms of peace. The highest form is like a river. We discussed that if we were able to see, then people wouldn't be able to stand all the harmful things that are available to us in life that surround us. And we discussed how many they are on our right side, on our left side, 1,000, 10,000, and what they cause us. They cause us to have weak knees, weak feet, wear down the rabbi's clothing, to feel crowded. One can see them with the dust and seeing rooster feet around his bed in the morning. And if one wants to see them, how he's got to take the placenta of a firstborn, the son of a firstborn, black cat, son of a black cat, daughter of a black cat, and burn that placenta and put it in one's eye and see it. But then one has to do that whole procession to ensure it doesn't get damaged. We said that one's prayer is most listened to if it's in shul. And then we went on to discuss that God is present when there are 10, 3, 2, and 1. 10, God precedes them. 3, God comes when they come, even though they're only doing justice. 2, God writes down what they say. And 1 is God is present for his learning. We'll meet Be'ezat Hashem at 8:30 for our...